Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight in the fair city of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Film Festival 2001 opens, and it will continue with hundreds of films being shown tonight through October 2nd, A City with the View. With this hour of the program, going to be zeroing in on one of the documentaries. There are many, of course, from all over the world being shown. There are talkback sessions where you can discuss the films, which is a great thing to do. There are children's films for the first time in this festival. We are later in the hour going to be talking with the artistic and executive director of the Milwaukee Film Festival about all there will be in this city during the next week and a half. And the first part of our program will concentrate on Louder Than a Bomb, which is one of the documentary films which I had the great pleasure of watching yesterday. It is described like this: without poetry, Bob Dylan might have gone to law school, and Usher could be tap dancing on street corners. Greg Jacobs and John Siskel, they are our guests this hour, follow a passionate squad of teen bards as they gear up for the world's largest Youth Poetry Slam, and it takes place in Chicago. Chicago's Louder Than a Bomb Fest. It spotlights many different high schools, prep school, and some really tough urban schools, and the students become very, very good friends. It also looks at all that they are going through as adolescents, and some of it is pretty tough stuff. The film has won Audience Choice Awards at 6 major festivals, and it celebrates the power of words to inspire individuals and also to ignite social change. These students are more than decent with the pen. So joining us in just a moment, John Siskel and Greg Jacobs. They are producers and directors of Louder Than a Bomb, which will be shown at the Milwaukee Film Festival on Saturday, October 1st, and Sunday, October 2nd. To give you a little flavor of the kinds of poetry that you hear and the students who write this, we thought we would play a little bit. This is from one of the schools, and we'll hear more about the school. It is Counting Graves.
We're the Stomping Out Slam Team, and we are counting graves.
10, 9, 8.
7-year-old boy put 6 feet deep in a 5-foot coffin, wondering what for, why three grown men have to drive by, and he dodged a couple of bullets, but
1. Room as bright as the box, little brother sleeps in. Big brother feeding like a magician, cut it up in the corner with Mary Jane, cause like mom and little brother, he already made Jack Daniels disappearing as tears trickle down face, eyes and veins and bloodshot red, heart pounds like beating drums in Africa. Being a provider was his only mistake.
Just counting graves to go to sleep, because counting sheep stopped working since he decided to not breathe. Keep telling myself it's not my fault, but as my conscience decided to talk, I really don't know anymore. You see, my pain burst through my soul like an open sore, and I can't escape my thoughts because there's no more open doors.
This pitch black chamber, as dark as a vexed soul. Only vivid images pop in and out of existence like quantum physics. Big brother, where are you? I can't see. I can't. I'm hot. My bed is now a 5-foot box, and I'm not comfortable in it. Mama said you shouldn't leave me alone for more than 5 minutes.
But I only left you alone for about 6 minutes.
One of the groups participating in the team poetry slam, there are also individual performers, and we're very happy to have the producers and directors of Louder Than a Bomb with us. John Siskel is a producer and director joining us. John, hello. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, our great pleasure. And Greg Jacobs, producer and director of Louder Than a Bomb. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I was so absolutely amazed by this. I had no idea this kind of poetry slam was going on. And it is such an important thing, not only to the students, and what happens to many of them is extraordinary, but also to the schools competing in this. It's just, it's profound, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, one of the things that was designed from the start with Louder Than a Bomb, and the event itself was founded in 2001, but from the start it was designed to change the culture of schools. There are poetry slams all over the country, but none of them do it quite the way they do it here in Chicago, where you start off with teams based in schools that work together for the bulk of the year and then meet up in the spring to perform in the And the result is that, you know, for months and months and months, these kids are doing this, you know, almost like team sport, but it's an academic activity. And it changes the kids, and then slowly it starts to kind of bleed over into the school, and other kids start hanging out and coming by. And when it really works, it really does change the schools themselves.
And really changes some of these students. They've gone on to do remarkable things.
Yeah, they really have. You know, I think we're going to get to meet one of the poets featured in the film shortly, who goes to Smith College. But yeah, they've all gone on to do amazing things. And one of the other things that's incredible about Louder Than a Bomb is that it not only changes the cultures of the school, but I think it is in some ways changing the culture of the city. You know, it really bridges a lot of divides in the city of Chicago. So kids from different neighborhoods are connecting, different religions, different races, and really making these very intense connections and bonds.
It's remarkable to me the different experiences that they're writing about. Some are writing about it, violence on their street. Others are writing about making an impact on the world. What they experience individually is quite varied, isn't it?
They really do come from all over the map in Chicago, literally, and beyond now, some of the western suburbs, even into Indiana. But the great thing is that there's so much support and trust and belief in each other at the event, that it really doesn't matter. You know, you could be talking about, you know, the sort of brutality of your very rough neighborhood, or I remember one poem that was about from a suburban girl who it was all about how her parents wouldn't let her go to the Maroon 5 concert, and the kids loved it. And it really, you know, it sort of doesn't matter, because they find common ground in experiences. Oh, well, my parents don't let me do things either. And, you know, they're forced to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the most profound thing, is that they hear these stories from places that they would never go and people they would never meet. And just the act of listening actively really changes them.
And my goodness, these teachers, don't you wish you had them in high school?
Yeah, they are incredible. They're really the unsung heroes of this whole thing, you know, especially with the, you know, the poets that you met earlier, the Steinmanauts, their coach, Coach Sloan and Coach Hood. They really love these kids and work so hard to support them and encourage them and, you know, help them express themselves. Yeah, they're amazing.
Mm-hmm. They all, even in the most unlikely students, they see something in students, and this is what good teachers do, and so many teachers do. They see that something that can flourish in a child, it can really change his or her life. It's just, it's the best.
Yeah, it really, they're one of the coaches in the film talks about how, you know, the hardest thing about being a teacher, and also one of the best things, is you see potential greatness in a kid.
Right.
And it's incredibly difficult to convince the kid that your vision is not crazy, as he says. And that's what you see in all these things. I mean, I always describe it as, it's really at its heart a story, as cheesy as this sounds, about kind of the power of unspoken love. The kids know that they have these people in their lives that, you know, really love them and will really, really support them and back them up. And when you have that kind of foundation, it gives you the opportunity then both to fail without, you know, ruining your life, and then to thrive. And that's pretty wonderful to see.
How did this come to your attention, Greg and John, and make you decide that you wanted to do a film on it?
It was actually a fluke.
Really?
as these things often are. I happened to be driving down Clark Street near Wrigley Field in Chicago with my wife in the spring of 2005. And there's a club here in Chicago called the Metro. It's sort of a famous rock club. And on the marquee that night, I looked up and it said, Louder Than a Bomb High School Poetry Slam Finals tonight. And there was a line of kids of all shapes and sizes and colors down the block. And it's, you know, Chicago is such a segregated city. It's very unusual to see that kind of diversity anywhere on the north side of Chicago among teenagers. But on a Saturday night to see poetry, like, that just seemed odd and pretty amazing. And it also meant that there were kids who were on stage that night who were reading and performing their poems for each other. And I wrote some pretty horrible poetry as a high school student that never should see the light of day, and I couldn't imagine doing that. So those two things made me think there's something really interesting there. So I went and mentioned it to John the following week, and he said, well, let's take a look. That's how the whole thing got started.
And there you go. Were these students, those who participate, identified as very good students in English class or in writing class, or do they happen to just walk through the doors because they're interested in this? They've heard about it from somebody else?
I think for each one of them, it's, you know, slightly different. You know, some of the students were recruited out of their English classes, and some students just kind of happened to find their way to the Poetry Slam room and thought it was, you know, interesting and kind of hung around in the back and then slowly made their way forward and started writing and performing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the Nova's coach, in fact, Peter Kahn, always talks about the turtle, which is his name for the kid who starts off the year with his hoodie over his head and his head down on the desk, so he looks like a turtle. And, you know, sort of steadfastly refuses to participate or even acknowledge that this thing is going on around him, even though he keeps showing up. And then slowly the hood comes off, and then the head comes up, and by the end of the year that student is up and is, you know, the star student on stage. And I think probably every coach has at least one of those stories. So you really can, you know, you can see great students participating, but you can also see students who are failing their classes. But this is just a way that they've found to express themselves and find their voice.
And you learn a whole lot more in this kind of competition than how to craft a wonderful poem. They're dealing with issues of respect in some of these schools. They're dealing with cross-cultural differences and getting to love people who live lives very different than yours. Just a whole host of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as Greg mentioned, you know, it really is as much about being a part of the audience and listening and really hearing what the poet on stage is communicating. It's an essential part of the whole exchange.
And they all, you know, the folks at Young Chicago Authors who created and run the event, you know, always talk about how they're not doing this to make poets. They're doing this to give people the tools to handle anything in life afterwards. But all the things that they learn from the writing to the how to handle this kind of community become incredibly valuable assets for them as they go on. And really, you know, they sort of get there thinking that they're coming to a competition about poetry, and they leave realizing that something totally different has happened, and they're different people.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty special.
Yeah. Let's concept. We're going to meet Nova in just a moment. Nova is a remarkable poet who started her poetry trying to get rid of the memory of her father, and she is now at Smith. It's quite a journey, and she'll be joining us on the air in just a moment. But I wanted to hear part of a poem and hear you talk about this wonderfully effusive, kind young student who really everybody falls in love with, Adam Gottlieb. Do you want to describe him before we hear a little bit of his poem?
Adam is only describable as Adam Gottlieb. He is this incredibly sweet, wonderful kid from an almost preposterously loving family, and he seems to have such an appreciation for everyone else. And for in such an incredible sense of perspective on what's important in life and who's important, that it just sort of melts people. He is, as Kevin Kofel, the founder of Land of the Bomb, says, he's a superstar, because this kid who you think, as Kevin says, is going to get his lunch money stolen, actually ends up just being so infectious and so loving that you just can't help but like him. And he then turns out to be a spectacularly gifted poet.
And that's what he wants to do for his life. He'd love to just do poetry, right?
We hope. you know, I don't know. I mean, he could end up becoming, an investment banker, which would be fine, too. He could bring poetry into that field. It would be sad if he didn't write anymore because he's a gifted kid.
We're going to hear a little bit from Adam, one of his poems. Later on, we'll meet Nova, who's now a student at Smith, and maybe she'll do part of one of her poems for us as well. It really changed her life dramatically, I think, to be a part of this. What we're talking about this hour is one of the films that you will be able to see in the Milwaukee Film Festival, which opens today. The film is Louder Than a Bomb, and it will be at the Oriental on Saturday, October 1st, and Sunday at Ridge Cinema. We're speaking with the producers and directors of Louder Than a Bomb. First, a little bit of Adam, and then we'll meet Nova.
Everybody's got something to say about poetry. Because rhymes peak in meaning, shedding light on our unspeakables. For an ample example, take the other day when I sat not knowing how to write a poem, and assuming I was fruitlessly booming the thin air, I yelled and spat my frustration. How do I start? And my dog looks up from her water dish and says, I hate to encroach on your artistic space, because I know you're like in the zone or whatever, but if you really want my advice, here it is. And then my dog says, poet, breathe now. Because it's the last thing you'll ever do for yourself. Poet, breathe now, because there's a fire inside you that needs oxygen to burn, and if you don't run out of breath, you're gonna run out of time. Poet, breathe now, because once the spot gets packed, you gotta save that air for screaming. Your inhalation takes saviorisms to sky highs, you gotta go with the flowing of your own voice. Poet, breathe now, because once you spit, you won't even need air, you'll be rocking rhymes respiratory, you'll breathe poetry, baby. You breathe now, and you'll never forget that breath. You got pulsative passages passing the mic, and hot hallelujahs when verses you write, and your sin is your savior, your song is your life, and your words are like wonders to wandering fifes, pipe and ceremony, poets you man, words you wife, and your honeymoon orbits around your love like metronomic metros, keeping time to the heartbeat of your heavenly drums. Poet, breathe now, because you might have something to say, because peace might depend on your peace, because you breathe, and there might help your brain tell your heart to keep bumping one more cycle, and that blood might help your lips form one last word that hits the audience hard, because we are all made from the same elements and we all breathe the same air. So celebrate our mutual recipes of existence by persisting to stay alive, ducking sageless, luckless ages like intellectual hippies. When you take a breath, the universe rings out like circular beats, landing planets are seraphim, storms are spit, stars are soul candles, and you breathe like chest rebounds even when all hope seems lost. Our sounds pound mics like hope stars, like we are still here. Hollas, we make angels of our nightclubs, bards of our bums, outlooks of our outcast, and infinity of our sums. We are the children of empathy, the pathos of slums. We heal like Helios, like cyclical drums. We enlist life from listless, and sometimes even get things done. Poet, breathe now, because once you start your piece, you can die behind that microphone, and death may be breathless, but poetry's deathless, so breath be our savior eternal. Poets, breathe once with me now. That's one poem we all wrote.
Adam Gottlieb, one of the poets featured prominently in Louder Than a Bomb. And it is one of the featured films. There are many films, but it's one of the spotlight presentations, the Teen Spotlight, at the Milwaukee Film Festival, which opens today in Milwaukee. We'll return with the producers and directors, and also with another young poet who is featured in the film. Her story is very moving. Why she wrote poetry will be striking to you, and we'll ask her if she wants to give us a little bit of her poetry. She's now a student at Smith. Here's our number, too. I forgot to give that to you. 800-486-8655 if you want to join this conversation, or send an email at talk@wpr.org. And I do also want to tell you, if you go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, we have two pairs of vouchers for the Milwaukee Film Festival, and you just need to say that you want them, and then the first two people who do that, we will send them to you. Okay? What a morning. Two more poetry, louder than a bomb, in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining our conversation is one of the young poets. She's now a student at Smith, Nova Venerable, and she started her poetry work and her poems concentrating on getting rid of the memory of her father, a pretty aggressive man. She, I don't think it's unfair to say, had a pretty tough life growing up in Chicago, and took care of her brother who had many disabilities, and she has flourished into a remarkable poet, and I'm interested in finding out what's happened to her since this competition, too. So Nova joins our conversation with the producers and directors of Louder Than a Bomb. Hi, Nova.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I was just riveted by your performances and watching the documentary yesterday. You were just, oh, you had so much to say, and I kept thinking, I wish you that you had had an easier life. Do you ever think that, or are you so far beyond that now that you don't even worry about it anymore?
Yeah, no, I mean, I turned out fine. I'm okay with how my life went.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. So did you start the whole thing really to get rid of the memory of your father because it was so hard?
Yes, yes.
Why was it so hard? What did you write about?
Well, you know, when I was younger, divorce puts children in a very strange situation in relation to their parents, and my father was a very aggressive man, so when I was younger, I had a lot of anger towards him, and I was always constantly trying to let go everything that happened between us and letting go of that guilt of, you know, not talking to him anymore and just everything that accompanied it. And I guess the piece was more so about my relationship with him when I was a child, and, you know, how I had to take care of him and just, you know, doing things that I probably shouldn't have done at my age. And at the end of the piece, you know, I talk about how being a 17-year-old woman about to go off to college, how much I missed him and how much I wanted him in my life, and, you know, wondering if my life would have been any different if he would have stayed in it.
Mm-hmm. And you also spent a long time taking care of your very disabled brother.
Yes, I did. He is the love of my life.
Oh. You wondered how it would be to not see him. You're now at Smith. You must miss that connection.
I really do. It's been really hard, especially, you know, going into my senior year. I was abroad for 2 months over the summer, so I didn't really get to see him too much this summer. And when I did go home, he was very attached to me, and he hadn't been that attached to me in a very long time, so having to say bye to him at the end of this summer was very difficult for me, but I'm glad that I get to go back home sooner than I had expected to go and see him.
Where did you go abroad?
I was in Spain for 2 months.
Ooh.
Yes.
That was all right. I found it striking that you said, and I wonder if this has changed, at the end of the film you talk about really wanting to have a normal life, that you want two children, a boy and a girl, you don't want to get married until you're 26, and you think that you would like to be a teacher. Is that still the same?
The two kids is still the same. I would like to have two children, a boy and a girl. As far as getting married when I'm 26, I'll still be in medical school, so I don't think that's going to happen.
Medical school? What are you going to do?
Well, right now I'm a psychology major with a double major in Spanish. So I would like to go into psychiatry, but knowing how I am, I'll probably get to med school and it'll change and I'll want to do something else like surgery or something. I have no idea right now. But I'm planning on going into psychiatry and doing a combined program to get a PhD in psychology as well. And from there, I really wanted to be a behavioral analyst for the FBI or something like that. Something interesting.
My, my. Well, your life is certainly going to be interesting. Let me ask John and Greg, does it surprise you where Nova is right now? I imagine when you look at the film, you knew that there was something big inside this young woman.
Yeah, no, it doesn't surprise us at all. I mean, she's incredibly talented and, you know, just a wonderful person. And, you know, what was kind of shocking to us was that, you know, here was this incredible poet. Clearly, you know, she did well in, you know, kind of the English and literature, but I think at that time we were filming, we came to find out that math was actually the subject she was best at. So, No, it was. It's not a surprise to us at all.
Yeah, I always say that my goal is to grow up and be as strong as Nova someday. but that said, her, you know, it's fun kind of watching the choices that she makes because those are always surprising. I think the FBI behavioral analyst thing threw me for a loop when I first heard it.
Yeah, it will be. I'm interested in finding out where you go to, Nova. You can go in so many directions. Did you have to fight your way into this poetry slam competition because you were a freshman, and how can a freshman enter such a thing?
I guess my first year, I wouldn't say that I necessarily had to fight my way into it. My first year when I was a freshman, I was very disappointed that I didn't make the team because I was a freshman. So in that sense, yes, I did. But what PK did for me that year was he allowed me to be an intern on the slam team, so that way I could sit in and go around to bouts and see what Louder Than a Bomb was all about. And I got to, you know, work with the poets that were actually on the team with critiquing and writing. And it was still a really fun experience, even though I didn't make the team.
Would it be an overstatement to say that this whole event really gave you enormous opportunities?
Not at all. It really did. If I tell people all the time, if it weren't for, you know, Spoken Word and PK and Louder Than a Bomb, I'd have no idea where I would have ended up.
Isn't that remarkable?
It is.
You know, that you did the right thing at that time. Do you want to do one of your poems? You don't have to if you don't want to. Do you want to do part of one so we can hear you?
Did you want one from the film or just anyone?
I don't care. What do you want to do? Whatever you want to do.
I have a short one that I wrote.
Thank you. Great.
And I can do that one.
That'd be great.
Okay. Well, this one is based off of a workshop that I teach, and I wrote from the perspective of an envelope. So here it goes. His address is scratched into my torso, so I will never forget the summers we spent lying on his couch, wondering how many days we had left until we tired of each other's flesh. He prints his name over my belly, so every man after would know that I was his first. I drill my college box into my cheeks, hoping that my area code will never seem farther away than my face's to his name welded into my skin. He folds a piece of himself and tucks it into my free space. He licks the small of my back until I am sealed, and we are sent away for the last time before we forget how to love, before letters stop and the post office forgets how to sort out distance, and we can no longer be carried back and forth between states, weightless, like cigarettes travel. I am picked up from a mailbox, and the zip code in my cheek is enough. The piece of him that I was given for keepsake is torn from my spine, unfolded, and exposed to the eyes of a woman that I have never seen. I am discarded, left between this morning's coffee beans and bills, wondering if his folded edges will ever be able to mend the tears in my back, or if I am just a small coffin burying our words into forgotten mail piles.
Mm. Have you heard that one, gentlemen?
Yes, because we was at a workshop. I think Nova wrote it at a workshop that she led at a film festival in Toronto.
Oh, my.
And the thing that always amazes me, I mean, it was to come up with something like that essentially in the span of 45 minutes while teaching is pretty incredible. I could probably labor for 10 or 15 years and not be able to write something like Nova can, you know, dash off in a class.
Right. Here's an email that's come in from Nancy in Janesville. I love this program. The tragedy is that this is so unique. With school funding cutbacks, the arts have suffered disproportionately. We would have healthier children and a better society all around with more arts. Those who have a means of expressing their unique voice and are heard and are respected are less likely to act out. The arts run through virtually every endeavor that produces something, yet they are not recognized as having that significance generally.
We should put that on our poster.
Yeah, exactly.
That pretty much says it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, it's one of the...
It's actually, you know, very inexpensive. It really is dependent upon the teachers and the coaches in the schools to you know, provide the time after school and you know, get the space. But, you know, what we've been hoping is that the film can kind of be the bridge to bring it into the classrooms. And so we have, you know, an educational DVD that is available.
Oh, you do? Wonderful.
To schools all over the country.
And great.
People can go to our website. And, yeah, we just, the goal for the film is really to get the film into every classroom to then kind of spark this interest. Because inevitably when high school students see the film, the first thing they ask us is, how can I do this in my school? I want to write poetry like that.
What is the website?
louderthanabombfilm.com.
louderthanabombfilm.com.
And it is, in some ways, incredibly low-hanging fruit. It is something that, inexpensively can change kids and change the school. And, you know, this is the farthest thing from a political film. But I think one of the messages that people leave with is exactly what the listener emailed, which is that, you know, the arts are not an extra. They are essential.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of students, they're the thing that they can grab onto that then pulls them through school.
Yeah, right. And it does for many of these students. And Nova, before we let you go back to your studies, what do you hope people will gather from this film? What did you gather when you saw it? And what do you hope people who see it at our film festival will walk away with?
I really hope that people pay attention to the sense of community that is needed for students, especially students, you know, that grow up in the inner city or that grow up in places where they don't have access to books or where they don't have access to teachers that actually care about their education. I hope that they take away that with the sense of community or with this sense of, with this safe forum, that you can really pull yourself out of any situation you need to in order to get ahead in life. And I really hope that young students that do struggle will be able to take that message away and will be able to start doing something to not only help themselves, but to help their family situations.
Well, it's a real privilege to talk to you and hear you doing so well. You're a very gifted person. Do you feel this responsibility? You got to do a lot now, don't you? It's okay, but you're just gifted. Thank you, Nova, very much for being
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thanks
Thank you.
For having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. She's one of the poets, and they're all remarkable, featured in the documentary that we're talking about this hour, part of the Milwaukee Film Festival, which opens tonight in Milwaukee, Louder Than a Bomb. We have the directors and producers of this film with us. We go to a call, Ellen in Brookfield. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
First of all, I am almost unable to breathe. That first poem just... it sucked everything out of me, and I actually sat there almost till the end going, breathe. When I heard that the show was going to be on what it is, it was like, okay, another boring show. And I am so happy I'm listening to it. I am just, God, I can't even stop crying. It's so wonderful. When I was thinking when I was in high school, things like this were open to the students who were doing well. If you weren't doing well, you weren't wanted, and the statement that it didn't matter if you were a good student, it didn't matter how you were doing in school, you come, you be here, you know, sit here with your hoodie over your head. It doesn't matter. Be here until you find yourself and find what you need. And how absolutely gorgeous that is. And for so many of us who were lost in the world, to have been able to have had a place like that, to find ourselves. And, you know, not everybody who's in there is an excellent poet, I know, but everybody in there is finding their soul. And mm-hmm. I'm overwhelmed. It's gorgeous.
And you haven't even seen the film yet. You better go see the film, Ellen. John, Greg.
Yeah, I'm practically in tears. No, that's really amazing, and it really speaks to the power of what these kids have to say. That, and you didn't even play the full poem of Counting Grades.
Right.
It's incredibly moving, and we have we get reactions like this after every screening. People are just blown away by these kids.
Thank you very much. And it's true what she said, that they're not all going to be outstanding poets. We're not going to listen intently to everything that's said, but that they are finding their voices, which is so crucial.
Exactly.
No, yeah. It's very true, and it's they sometimes compare it to, you know, basketball or soccer or jazz, where, you know, it doesn't matter where you're from if you can play. And so, you know, it's this great combination of kind of a democracy and a meritocracy where the kids support everybody, whether they are, you know, a good poet or a kid shaking on stage with their paper in their hand, barely able to read. But they also know who's really great. And, you know, so there's no faking it. It's not like everybody wins kind of thing. It's a place where incredible talent is supported and just speaking your voice is supported. Great students are supported. Not great students are supported. And that's very rare.
Victoria in Appleton, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment in regard to the film. What was it called again?
Louder Than a Bomb.
Louder Than a Bomb. I'm a former teacher, and I'm retired now. And about, for 5 or 6 years, I was the host of a poetry open mic at a local cafe in Appleton. And it was the most rewarding experience. I'm a poet myself. I started writing poetry when I was 18. And to bring children or kids to that level of wanting to express themselves but don't know how to do it, it was just the most wonderful experience. I had kids from 13 to 82 at the open mic. And we did a poetry slam. I did one for a junior high school in town. And it was so rewarding to see these young people be able to express themselves. And I wish I could get to Milwaukee and see Louder Than a Bomb. It was just the most thrilling thing. Everybody needs an outlet, and poetry sometimes isn't the first choice a young person would choose as an outlet. But I'm beginning to think that that is not so. You know, we express ourselves in many ways, and poetry is one of the most rewarding ways to express yourself and to get involved with poetry slams or open mics. I am so much in favor of that, that I always had a dream that I would have poetry on our local transit buses, you know, instead of the paintings or pictures or advertisements they have, because I think it's so important.
Go to it. That's a good thing to do. Thank you, Victoria, very much. That's a great call. Judy in Grand Marsh. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thank you so much. Please take my money and let me buy a DVD of this film. Please.
Gentlemen?
Well, I would joke that at the moment the DVDs are $100,000 a piece.
Oh, dear.
The film is going to be premiering on the Oprah Winfrey Network as part of the documentary club that they've created.
Wonderful.
So that is on January 5th, 2012. And soon afterwards, the commercial DVD will be available. So you can go to our website or email us at ltab@siskeljacobs.com or follow us on Facebook, and there'll be updates kind of letting people know when they can start to order the DVD. And if you're a teacher or a library or a college, you can also order the educational DVD, which is available now.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judy. And, of course, you can come to Milwaukee to see the film. We're going to end this segment with another of the student poets, Marshall. The poem is Look. With deep thanks to John and Greg, thank you for doing this film. You've done a wonderful service, and it's really well done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, John Siskel, Greg Jacobs. Producers and directors of Louder Than a Bomb, one of the films. There are hundreds of films being shown at the Milwaukee Film Festival. This one caught our attention because of the subject matter. I'm a former high school teacher, too, and I just thought it was wonderful, inspirational, and good, really good. And we thank Nova Venerable, one of the young poets. This is Marshall. We're going to hear more about the whole festival in a moment. This poem is Look.
Look! I got these other poets shook. Lift my hood, they better jetta, get wet with my new book. Villainous villanelles, I write jail mail for the crooks. True story. Your new stories do bore me. Pour out for the homies, ambrosia flavored savory, new 40s. Yep, my grizzle, I'm on it. Y'all don't really want it, cause I concuss you with just your mama jokes. Written as new sonnets. Pen damager, iambic pentameter, spin freakish flows as prose. I've been slamming nerds. I'm a word wizard, I murk this sure. There's been a rumor around the slam like he works berserk. Yo, I heard that Nate been writing 80 poems a day since age 1-8. He made 8 great anthologies and locked them all away. Damn straight. I'm serious like satellite radio frequencies. I'm speaking scenes. Super ahead of any open mic, you see. I freaking seize. I'm a geek, you see. Allen Ginsberg when I spin words, a beat poet. No, really, I beat poets. See, so come against me, it's essential that you lose, because I'll leave your dreams deferred. My ego is Langston Hughes. I bang bruise the pad with pins and leave them black and blue. Stay strapped with stanza shots, and cat, I'll pull the gat on you. I had to do it. You knew what I was concealing, because I'm a big bad gangster cool kid who writes about his feelings. A mama's boy, a bastard child, a geek who has a rapper style, a sensitive thug, a kid who's all grown up now doesn't have to smile. Look, these other poets got me shook. Their stories move me, and I don't deserve my name up in that book. I've been here long enough to know where slam is strong enough to go. Just understand there's more than that, and focus long enough to blow. Cause I remember being 13, feeling not so satisfied. In the next 5 years, I got jumped, seen friends and both my grandmas die. But a mic, a stage, a pen, a page helped end my rage and mend my days. So I'll admit I've been afraid of leaving this, cause when I stayed, I found my voice. But now my time is up, I gotta get away. So excuse the couplet cockiness I ever show when rocking this. Just trying to give my everything for everything I got from this. Kevin Koval told me I could write. My slam coach told me not to hype. I've loved and lost on final stages. The fates told me it's not the night. But still, I thank this forum for help making me so strong, for letting me talk about sex, drugs, basketball, and moms. Fond farewell to this chapter and to all the joy and laughter. This for every kid whose voice has been louder than a bomb.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jonathan Jackson is the Artistic and Executive Director of the Milwaukee Film Festival, and he is with us now to talk about not all of the films, there are too many, but to give us an idea of the scope and breadth and beauty and age groups invited to attend these films that will run from tonight, actually, until the 2nd of October. Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for having me. I got a little nervous there when you said I had to talk about all 177.
I know. I was reading all of the descriptions of them last night, and it took me a long time. There are a lot of films at this, aren't there?
Yes. Well, I mean, we really pride ourselves on, you know, trying to present truly as diverse a selection of movies possible, because we really believe that this film festival is for the entire community. And, you know, we're showing films from around the world, but, you know, we're also showing films for kids, and we're trying to show, you know, dramas, comedies, romances, action films, sports movies. So, you know, sometimes people have preconceptions about what a film festival movie might be, but we truly have movies for everyone, and you know, they're obviously educational and important and enlightening, but, you know, they're entertainment. They're movies.
Mm-hmm. And some of them deal with material that we just don't know very much about and do it in a riveting fashion, I'm sure.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, one movie that I always like to spotlight this year, it's been sort of a, I've been working on this screening for about 9 months now. But I'm so delighted on Saturday night when we present The Interrupters at its premiere in the festival, Saturday night at the Oriental Theater. This is a documentary by Steve James, who is known to audiences particularly for his documentary Hoop Dreams.
Oh, sure.
This is his new film, and it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival this year, and it received great acclaim there. But it's particularly interesting, I think, because it really shows you a different view of violence and violence in a community, and one amazing organization called Ceasefire in Chicago and their response to it. And I think that there's some great lessons in this film, and I think they're important for our community here, and we're just delighted to have Steve James, the director, and the main subjects of the film, Amina, Kobe, and Eddie, here.
Oh, great.
at that Saturday screening.
Wonderful. Well, I know that there are going to be some kind of seminars or talkback sessions after the film. Will that be the case for this one?
Absolutely. There will be an extended Q&A at that screening for The Interrupters, and we actually left a slot open so that we'd be able to have an extended talkback, because it's really going to be a special experience. I mean, it's rare that you get to see, you know, even actors or directors at the screening, but this is just particularly emotional because of, you know, what you see on screen in this movie with the people actually on the streets interrupting violence as it's breaking out. And I mean, these are like superhero figures, and they're going to be here on hand at the audience, and we've done a lot of work prior to the festival to outreach to the great violence prevention community in Milwaukee, so that we try to bring that community here as well as our regular festival, general festival goers, to try and, you know, build a special moment at the festival. In addition to that, we've actually organized a panel in conjunction with Mike Goucher and the Marquette University Law School on Monday, September 26th at 12:15 p.m. We're going to host a panel to talk about violence prevention in Milwaukee, and it's sort of an offshoot of this film, and Amina Matthews, one of the subjects of The Interrupters, is going to be there. But on the panel, we're going to have, you know, we're going to have police chief there, we're going to have a judge, we're going to have heads of different violence prevention organizations to talk not only about the film, but also about where we're at in Milwaukee and what we can do to, as a community, to, you know, try and work on this issue.
Good for you. That's absolutely great. How do you decide? You mentioned, you know, dramas and comedies. How many choices do you have as you look at putting together a festival like this? And do you make sure that you're doing certain kinds of categories, or that you have so many films from the Mideast, so many films from India, et cetera?
You know, it's literally endless. We are at, it's really exciting, but it's also, you know, somebody in my position makes it really hard. But we are at the greatest point of, you know, film production in its history because of technology and digital technology.
Mm-hmm.
The means with which filmmakers can make films, I mean, the incredible equipment that is now available for, you know, $10,000, you can make a movie almost like it looks if it's made in Hollywood. And because of that, so many people have cameras and equipment in their hands. Now, that also means that that multiplies all the films that, you know, aren't quite ready to be seen by the general public. And so that makes the job of sorting through these movies that much harder. But we have an incredible staff of programmers. We travel, you know, quite literally around the world, going to film festivals, searching for films. We look at all the award winners from different festivals around the world. And what we try to present in Milwaukee is really a best-of lineup. This is a lineup of award-winning films from other festivals. We're not necessarily trying to be the first to show a film or to discover a film. We're trying to provide, you know, the best 11 days of cinema possible. And so, you know, it makes it great for the audience here because, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to love the movie they see, or at least appreciate it.
And new this year, I believe, is children's films.
Well, this started in a small way last year, and this is really the full launch of it. And it's Take One Milwaukee Children's Film Festival, and it's a program we're just particularly proud of because, you know, there's a private school component to it that isn't advertised in our materials or on the website at mkefilm.org. But we have both school group screenings and open to the public screenings of these wonderful both feature and short films that are intended for kids as little as 3 years old and their parents to watch together and, you know, enjoy the film, but then also learn about media literacy, the concept of, you know, reading an individual image. I mean, today, the world that kids grow up in today and how they interact with images is so radically different than when their parents grew up. And yet, you know, it's our belief that there is not enough in our education system taught about media literacy. And so what we're trying to do is provide a service for both parents educators and children to teach them about basic concepts like what a commercial is and what, you know, watching a commercial on television means. And so at these screenings, we have a trained media literacy expert doing a warm-up discussion, a follow-up discussion after the movie, and then we have take-home materials for the kids to play with that, you know, talk about lessons of media literacy.
The other thing is that you've brought so many things that are so worth watching, and we have to remember that. There's a lot that's so moving. The people we just talked to, it changed people's lives to be involved in poetry slams, to highlight, you know, the troubling and the good, but to look at stuff that's well done. There's a lot of junk out there. This isn't junk. Right?
Well, you know, and one of the things you deal with is every single ad that you see for a movie today, whether it's good, bad, you know, just okay, you'll see that it's got about 15 quotes on it from different critics that you've never heard of.
Right.
And so the audience doesn't trust anymore what to see. And I think one of the reasons that we've been so successful and grown so much in the past couple of years is because people have trusted in, you know, why we show movies and why we present movies. And, you know, it's not just me that selects the films. We actually, in addition to our programming staff, we have a group of 20 people who watch feature films and another 20 who watch the short films we show. And we actually lock them in our offices basically April through June. And these are just volunteers who love movies and love the festival. And they watch like four feature films a week and, you know, 100 short films every month. And these are already sort of like culled and sorted, and these are really good festival selections that most would screen. And this community, these community members help us decide which films are right for us to show in Milwaukee.
And there are so many of them being shown. The website, again, mkefilm.org, so you can get more information about the hundreds of films being shown. If you would like to participate in maybe getting a voucher for, we have two pairs. You can go to the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Jonathan Jackson, Artistic and Executive Director of the Milwaukee Film Festival, which opens tonight in Milwaukee. We have a real Milwaukee theme going on. This is the weekend to come to Milwaukee. Doors Open Milwaukee is also coming up, and that's next hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning.